neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 19 of season 2. Part of the beauty of a healthy food system comes from the wide variety of people who are involved. You see, when it comes to food, we don't need to rely on just one interest group or just one industry sector or just one level of government or just one set of authoritative experts or just one model of food production and distribution. Instead, there's a glorious and productive assortment of ideas and projects to affirm. Sure, the players don't all have the same power, and there are conflicts, bruised noses and jerking knees, but on the best of days, when the catering has been exceptional and the phase of the moon is just right, all of these groups realize that they are rowing in the same general direction. Of course, in order to have that happen, we need people who are willing to inspire, to try out ideas, to collaborate, to celebrate victories, but also joyfully admit when they're wrong. We need, in short, leaders across the food system. Today we talk to one of these leaders from the community sector.
So I thought this was about food, and it's not. It's really about community. Every time we need the right person, there they are. It's been scary. Great. We don't even know how much food is actually being produced in our province at the community level. It's like the greenhouse and the root cellar met, and they had a baby, and the baby was a greenhouse with its arse in the earth.
If you scroll through websites about agriculture and food in Newfoundland and Labrador, you may come across reference to the Food Producers Forum. Today I chat with the fellow who helped this group to take shape, starting as an idea, a set of relationships, some opportunities, and a large portion of good faith. Dan Rubin is, I'm not sure how to introduce him really. He's a musician, an educator, facilitator, gardener, writer, consultant, catalyst. He's an all-round agent provocateur in the food sector in the province. We met up earlier this summer on a warm, caffeine-fueled August morning in St. John's.
Food Producers Forum is a vision gone wild. It began for me with my life and my garden in Pooch Cove, north of St. John's, where I've been gardening now for almost 18 years. Yeah. And it's a waterfront garden, so it's very windy and exposed. And when I moved there, came out from the Gulf Islands of British Columbia and realized I was in a very different place with long winters and challenges of wind and cold even in the summer, I realized that the basic technique that I used in BC, which was to build raised beds, would probably be an advantage here. And so currently in my double-wide city lot by the ocean in Pooch Cove, I have 25 raised beds and 27 fruit trees and bushes.
How much do you raise them?
I raise them by just officially 10-inch boards, okay. So that's 9.5 inches.
Yeah.
But most of my boxes that are filled with soil have a second box the same size perched right on top. Yeah. These are 7 by 3 foot frames built out of chunks of 2 by 10. Yeah. And in our climate, in our harsh winters, I can plant winter greens like lettuce, arugula, spinach, kale, chard, bok choy, corn salad into the beds in October, cover the upper box with a lid, a hinged lid built of 2 by 3 lumber with a plastic cover to provide protection. And I can go out in February and harvest greens. And they're there and they're fine. Yeah. And it's cold, so they're not growing much. Yeah. But they'll survive all winter long. So I've made some great discoveries. And that moved me into becoming perfectly perennial herbs and seeds, which is a miniature heritage seed company. And then from there into doing workshops called Creating the Year-Round Garden. And increasingly I've been doing garden and greenhouse design. But Food Producers Forum came into existence because of a project called the Earth Sheltered Greenhouse Project. And that was a design project. It's like the greenhouse and the root cellar met, and they had a baby, and the baby was a greenhouse with its arse in the earth. And that simple concept was so tantalizing that when I got connected with Andy Fisher at a time when he was undergraduate vice dean of engineering at Memorial University, I picked up 2 students and they did the design work. And suddenly here we are looking at a design for a 240 square foot 12 by 20 box with a concrete wall set into a hillside. and only the roof and the front wall transparent. So you have that tremendous passive heat capacity, that thermal mass of the concrete at the back. And we discovered we could heat it year-round for an electrical cost of about $400 to $500 for the year. And you could grow food year-round. So then the next phase was to actually build the greenhouse. And we're now in partnership, Memorial, the Food Producers Forum, which I will get to, and the O'Brien Farm collaboratively have created a 300-square-foot structure in a hillside, in a field, at the O'Brien Farm. So during the consultation, when we talked about community, one of the opinions that came out and was strongly endorsed by everybody around the table was that none of those groups, Food First, AgriFoods, the government, or whoever, was able to do the needed job of communication. Like, in a single voice, three, four different people said, we need a group that will be a communication hub that doesn't have one foot nailed to the ground because of politics or funding. So I went, oh, I know what that is, because we had already had a single evening meeting at Memorial called the Food Producers Forum several years ago, where we brought together 47 stakeholders. You were there, and everybody was there. AgriFoods was there, the Nurserymen's Association was there, the Restaurant Association was there, Lester's was there, Marie's was there, the seaweed fertilizer producers were there, and it was an amazing example of identifying key issues. But what I did was I went out and I recruited people for a board, and using a tiny chunk of our funding from Memorial, we established a nonprofit society, Food Producers Forum Incorporated. We registered it as a society. So we have created a website, a Food Producers Forum, F-O-R-U-M, folks, .com, foodproducersforum.com. And since November of last year, we have created more than 200 pages of content. And what it is it's links and connections for food producers, whether you're a gardener, a grower, or a large-scale farmer, hunters, fishers, and foragers. Because what we believe, this is our working hypothesis, is that we don't even know how much food is actually being produced in our province at the community level. And so one of our projects right now is three students at Memorial doing phone interviews with community gardens, home gardeners, food producers across the province to get a handle, solid data on what the food is that's being produced at the community level.
If I'm at home and I've got a row or two of carrots, got some tomatoes in the back patio, is this a website for me? Am I a food producer?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the core of our site is a 30-section online encyclopedia of how to produce food. And it has sections on root vegetables, and it has sections on fruit, and it has sections on composting, it has sections on indigenous matters, it has sections on hunting and foraging and fishing, on food waste and food distribution. Yeah. So it's all there. Yeah. But we want people not just to use it. We want them to participate and share.
Yeah.
We're an information hub. Yeah. That's what we are. A lot of people are starting from scratch, having lost a connection to their grandparents who may have grown food in their backyards. A big dimension of this is heritage and traditional knowledge. So what we expect is that once we have the basic data assembled, we'll have solid information that we can put in government's face to show them that they're ignoring the sector that more than any other sector has the capacity to realize food security, referencing it to the way it used to exist here in the outports.
Is there a piece of music that I can use here?
Oh, God. Let me think. Let me suggest something from the duo with my dear friend Dave Panting.
Oh, Tangle Cove? Is that the name?
What yeah, Tangle Cove. Yeah. We have a bunch of tunes out. I'm going to suggest a really strange one, and it is pretty dreamy. It's called Horizons, and it's a song about vision and about moving on.
Far away from here, Beyond all hope and fear, the things eternal etched in memory. But the world keeps on turning, and we are carried on. Always the horizons call to me. We're sailors on the ocean, setting off to find out whether things are really what they seem. Beyond the far horizons are lands we've never seen. We're sailing back to where we've never been.
That was the duo Tangle Cove with their song Horizons. Our guest today, Dan Rubin, is a member of Tangle Cove. I start this second section of the interview by asking him how he thought we're doing in the province related to policy and action around food.
We know where we want to go. We want to go back to a place that we once had in outport communities of food sufficiency, of food security, and of food as a community resource, not as a commodity bought and sold for profit. But how do we get there? And the important thing is to say, we don't know. My vision is that we are kind of like people on a hill with binoculars looking up into the sky, watching the shooting stars come down. And it's like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle are floating down out of the idea crystal dome above our heads. And the pieces are floating into place. And the project that we're working on that most vividly illustrates that reality and that potential for reassembling a working food system is our outreach project. So we have in place $10,000 of funding from the Office of Public Engagement at Memorial so that we can take the greenhouse model that we're going to demonstrate at the O'Brien Farm and start to move it out to rural communities. So 3 months ago or 4 months ago, we put out a call. Hey, are there any rural communities interested in creating a food hub that includes an earth sheltered greenhouse? And our expectation was we would find half a dozen places in and around St. John's, mostly on the Avalon, and we would work with those sites, and it would spread from there. Ivan, we got 26 applications for participation. It was astonishing. And they were all across the island and up into Labrador. And then we had the very difficult choice of identifying, we thought, five of these. Well, sure enough, we ended up with seven. Six on the island and one in Labrador, and decided we had the capacity to do the design work and the planning to get each of these sites ready to go to build a greenhouse. And then we would help them find funding. So we ended up with sites that are like links. It's a vision taking shape in real form. After hearing from those 26 communities, I say, well, people understand. Part of it that's so wonderful is beneath our feet, there is still this sense of we're all in this together. And referring to food and the rebirth of a food system, I feel like that's the ground beneath our feet. And now settling down from above is this notion, this vision of, hey, we can do better than this. So because it's taking shape at the grassroots level, government will either have to come with us or get out of the way, because we're going there. That's my notion. The real need is to demonstrate in a tangible form what is possible, because there's so many people who still think you can't grow food here, and that's false, or that you can't grow some kinds of things. Once you have protected space, which is what the greenhouse is, or even a lid over a raised bed, you can grow food all through the winter here. And people need to know that. And the best way to show that is to build it and let them see. So each of these places, Carbonear, Port Blandford, Gambo, Kings Point, Norris Point, and the Codroy, trace an arc right across the province, almost out to Port of Basque, across the island. And once we have a site in Labrador as well, we'll have people show up to get some vegetables or whatever and go, oh my, Look at this. Hey, Fred, we could build one of these. This is just wood and plastic and concrete. We know how to do that.
I mean, one of the things I think that is problematic in getting young people into food production as their vocation as well as avocation is the stats on the cost of getting into commercial farming, which is somewhere around $800,000.
Yeah.
It's not available to most people. There are a lot of people who are creating a lifestyle and a livelihood out of far less than $800,000 by piecing together a variety of, you know, a mixed farm, a variety of strategies. Is part of your data collection going to show the importance of that resilient model?
Absolutely. And one of our projects is a conference based in St. John, but digitally spread across the whole province and the region, called Regeneration Soil Food Community, which is scheduled for November 8th, 9th, and 10th.
Of this year.
Of this year.
Excellent. Yeah.
Where we will be talking about that. That dimension of the production of food, the need for young people to get into it, and the options that include smaller scale production. As I already mentioned, Aaron Rogers is leading the project at the O'Brien Farm that will create a training center for that. And because he's an agricultural economist, he's the right person to do that, because you need to be sustainable economically.
Yeah.
It needs to be a model that works.
Yeah.
And there's many different aspects of that. But I will mention, Quebec has an organic producer named Jean-Martin Fauchier, who is demonstrating that you can grow and market $100,000 worth of vegetables on an acre and a half of urban land.
He has a book, doesn't he?
He has a really great book on doing that.
With figures.
I think it'd be nice. reason he's able to do that is because he's fiercely dedicated to efficiency. And so every aspect of how wide your rows are, how long, what equipment you use to farm them, how you succession plant, how you market, how you harvest, how you store, he's got those things down. You know, what you grow, high value crops. That's a working example. The capacity is there, but you need working examples. And again, the distribution model is a big part of it, because one of the ways it becomes unmanageable for people to get into commercial agriculture is scale and expense.
Yeah.
But the other one is that if you're a commercial producer and you've bought into producing like 3 acres of broccoli, well, you have no choice. You have to retail that.
Yeah.
So that means you have to sell to a distributor who sells to a wholesaler who ships it, stores it, and then sells it to a retailer. And every time it crosses that line to a new middleman, the price doubles. What are you going to get paid as a farmer? And how can you afford it? Whereas if we have models set up that are more local, a single step like the Food Hub are modeling in Corner Brook, well, then we can pay the farmer more, and we can start to achieve some food justice and make that good food affordable to low-income people.
One of the other pieces is always secondary production in all this. So if you have 3 acres of broccoli and you just sell it when it's fresh and you don't do any freezing or processing, that's an area we really don't have secondary production capacity in. And I don't know if that's something that the food producers...
Absolutely. Because I'm interested in this at different levels. With Sean Dawson, I've done workshops on pickling, drying, freezing, canning, all of this. But there is that potential there, both in the food waste being thrown away at the retail level. A big portion of that can still be eaten, and it's still great. Some of it needs to be composted. But in the middle, you will have fruit and you will have vegetables that can be turned into chutneys and pickles and jams and relishes and canned vegetables and fruits.
Soup should be made with vegetables that are just slightly off.
Oh, yeah. And you could have any number of small groups with a restaurant-approved kitchen like the one at the farmer's market. And the same thing is true for commercial producers, both small and large scale. There's always surplus.
Opening the eyes of wonder and surprise, we chart a course into the blue beyond. Across the endless deep, by the compass of our soul. We trust the seas to carry us along. We're sailors on the ocean, carried by the waves, setting off to see what can be seen. Beyond imagination lie lands of ancient dream. Always the horizons lead us on. Always the horizons lead us on. And on, and on, and on.
That's Tangle Cold with their song Horizons. It's on their CD, Facing the Flame, available at good independent music stores everywhere. That is, if you can find an independent music store anymore. Today on Fit to Eat, I'm talking with Dan Rubin of the Food Producers Forum and many other endeavors. In this final section, I ask Dan about his own evolution in gardening strategies since settling in Pooch Cove earlier this century.
So you moved here 18 years ago,
yeah.
From an area where I think you told me once you throw a seed in the ground and run.
Well, if it's zucchini.
If it's zucchini, that's right. But like, how did you get your very positive view of the potentials here? Did it take you a little while to sort of switch and say, oh my gosh, we can't?
It took a few years,
yeah.
And basically it's been kind of like the drunkard's walk. You know, it's been this curly path through, yeah. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, that worked. Oh, yeah. That really didn't work. Oh, that worked.
It's like walking onions.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Walking onions. And also, it was the discovery of the walking onions, the heritage plants growing at the edge of my garden. Oh, what's that? Oh, my God, look at those things. What are they? Did they come from outer space or what? And the discovery that there were plants that I brought seeds for back from BC, like the kale that would do wonderfully here and survive the winter. And it's been a bit of trial and error. But one of the reasons I've never felt discouraged is, though, even though I grew up on the west coast of North America in a much warmer climate, I've grown to love the seasons. And I guarantee by March, by April, I'll be sick of the snow in winter, won't we all? But there is such hopefulness in seeing this return of the green. But you have to kind of have an attitude of, oh, what's this? Yeah. If you tend to be negative in your output, if I had been that way, I wouldn't be here doing this. Yeah. It's been a round of discoveries. And the big discovery for me is that in starting the Food Producers Forum, the people that I get to work with are so wonderful and so varied in their background and their origins and their skills and their knowledge that the power of it is in that community, that collaboration. So I thought this was about food, and it's not. It's really about community.
This is early August. What's a food out of your garden that you're especially excited about getting this time of year? Like, what's the crop that you wait? Some people wait for tomatoes, you know, the first tomato, sun-kissed tomato or whatever.
I have not cracked a tomato thing. I've got my tomatoes just barely forming, and I know there's people like David Goodyear who are eating tomatoes.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's a learning area for me. But right now, the three things that I'm most excited about are, first of all, broccoli. And the reason I'm excited is that I finally learned how to do it. And you grow it in raised beds, intensely planted, just 9 inches apart for a broccoli head. Yep. But you grow it under rime cloth to protect it from the white butterfly laying the egg, holding in moisture and holding in warmth. And my broccoli heads are, they're like 6 inches across.
Great.
The second theme I'm excited about is the garlic that I planted last fall that is still waiting to be harvested. And when I harvest it, the bulbs will be as big as a baseball. And then the third one, I would say, would be cherries. So I have planted, since I arrived in Pooch Cove 18 years ago, 3 cherry trees, 2 plum trees, 7 apple trees, a pear tree, a peach tree. I already had gooseberries. I've added black currants, red currants, white currants, grapes, and kiwis. I harvested 4 buckets of cherries for my 3 young trees this year.
Let me just finish off by going back to the beginning.
Sure.
the raised beds that you built.
Yeah.
What do you put in them these days? You know, after 18 years of experimentation.
That's the essential. I mentioned to you that I'm writing a book now that will be published in the spring by Boulder.
Okay.
And the working title right now is Sun, Seed, and Soil: Techniques and Tips from a Northern Gardener. And soil is the foundation. Soil is the real key. And to the extent that you can build a rich, fluffy mix of organic soil with good mineral content as well, you're launched. And so how do I do that? Well, first of all, to start our raised beds, we screen the soil and threw the rocks, the gravel, back in the path. And then we've added compost, maple leaves, manure, seaweed, a bit of peat, occasionally some chemical fertilizer, but not often and not very much. Mm-hmm. The real trick has been the compost. What I usually tell people, if you're starting raised beds, get a good delivery of triple mixed compost, but it has to be the real thing.
Yeah.
Preferably marine compost mixed with peat and topsoil, you know, dark and rich and crumbly. Yeah. So if you start with good soil and then you add manure and seaweed and compost.
Yeah. Any kind of manure? Chicken manure?
I prefer sheep manure.
Sheep. Okay.
Chicken manure is really powerful for nitrogen.
It is.
But it is possible to have too much nitrogen. And that's when you get aphids. Aphids are a message. Aphids are a message. Too much nitrogen. Yeah. I learned that from an orchardist in Ontario in a workshop. Okay. But the thing is that most people who are even established gardeners think nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium.
Right.
You know, like the three numbers, on the... Yeah. And those are the basics for growth, but they are necessary but not sufficient.
Yeah.
Plants also need magnesium and manganese and iodine and selenium and iron and copper and boron.
Yeah.
And where do you find those? Well, individually, you can buy borax and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
No, marine resources, because plants like seaweed and fish at the top of the food chain are always concentrating those metallic salts.
Yeah.
And the plants have to have those in trace amounts as catalysts and participants in their biology. So you have to add those materials.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Dan. And before I go,
the
address again for the Food Producers Forum, and because people might want to know about the conference.
So if you email us, we will put you on our email list, and you will hear about all of our projects and programs and those of our partners. And the email address is foodproducersforum@gmail.com, and our website is foodproducersforum.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Dan.
My pleasure.
One of the hardest parts of doing this show is to take a wide-ranging conversation of over an hour and edit it down to 22 minutes. That's my problem, not yours. But you should take from this dilemma the truism that there is still more to say about food than what we have had a chance to say thus far. Food as a topic can never really be talked out. There are always topics emerging, innovations developing, ideas percolating, initiatives clamoring for support. So if you're dismayed at the food system we have at the moment, don't worry, it won't always be like this. And if you're happy with the food system as it is, hold on tight and keep your umbrella handy. It won't always be like this.
Different people said, we need a group that will be a communication hub that doesn't have one foot nailed to the ground because of politics or funding. To go back to a place that we once had in outport communities of food sufficiency, of food security, and of food as a community resource, not as a commodity bought and sold for profit. Beneath our feet, there is still this sense of we're all in this together. Because it's taking shape at the grassroots level, government will either have to come with us or get out of the way, because we're going there. Soil is the foundation. Soil is the real key. Aphids are a message.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was Horizons by the duo Tangle Cove, which is Dan Rubin and Dave Panting. Look them up on the interweb. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by Bluegrass Confidential, a young band from North Georgia. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Ipke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Food Producers Forum is a vision gone wild.